Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 16th of December, 2020, and welcome to another episode of Reconstruction, the weekly podcast from the Construction Index, hosted by David Taylor, that's me, editor of the Construction Index magazine, and Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service. Hi there, Phil. It's nice to see your friendly mug. Yes, how are you?
All good. And we've got a special episode this week, which is quite exciting.
We have. Luckily, it's not just your mug that I have to look out for the next half an hour. Well, we've also got a special guest with us today, and it's Emma Stewart, Chief Executive of Timewise, a consultancy specialising in flexible working. Now, Timewise says on its website that its main purpose is helping employers design innovative solutions that attract talented, loyal people and create fair workplaces. And among the employers that Emma's been working with recently are four Tier 1 construction firms, namely BAM Construct, BAM Nuttall, Skanska and Wilmot Dixon. And also, Timewise has just completed a major survey of job adverts, not just in construction, but right across the board, about 6 million vacancies they've had a look at. And Emma's here to tell us about her findings and hopefully shed some light on how they might affect the construction industry. So, Emma, welcome to Reconstruction. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Jolly good. I thought we'd start by, if I asked you a little bit about Timewise. I mean, I've only really briefly introduced the firm. What is Timewise? How did it get going? And how did you get into this line of work?
So Timewise is a social business, and we have been running for about 15 years. I set the organisation up because, very personal experience, I had a successful career as a TV producer, and then I decided to have some kids, and I realised that it was very difficult to work as a TV producer on a flexible or part-time basis, which is what I wanted to do because I had kids. Fast forward 15 years, and essentially what we do is we're driven by a social mission to enable everyone to get the flexibility they want in work without compromising their careers. And we try and achieve that through three things. Firstly, we help employers to get better at flexible working through consultancy, through training, through the sort of change programs that we're going to talk about in construction. And our clients range from FTSE 250 firms. We work with the likes of Google, Tesco, London Stock Exchange, major NHS trusts to help them really try and overcome some of both, I guess, cultural and operational barriers to basically enabling them to attract, retain, maximise the talent of people who struggle to work the standard 9-to-5. So we help employers. Second thing is we help people who want their next job to be a flexible job. So we help job seekers, and we run our own job site called Timewise Jobs. And we represent about 95,000 people looking for work. It's going up every day, as you can imagine, but they're specifically looking for flexible jobs. And then the third thing we do is we make a lot of noise about flexible working. So we campaign for it, we run awards, we do research, so the index you just mentioned, to raise awareness. So, but as you can imagine, it's been an interesting and busy year for us.
Now, Emma, yeah, I'm here representing the ignorant listeners. What is flexible working?
Good question. So we define it as Timewise really simply. It's anything which is different to a standard full-time way of working. But there's three axes we look at. One is where you work. Clearly, we are all now working from home. So remote working is one element. When you work, which particularly in construction is very relevant. So the kind of start times, end times, the times of the day that you choose to work. And then the third area is how much you work. So that's your kind of part-time, job share, other forms of working. So we look at those three axes, and it's effectively anything that means that people have some element of control over how much, when, or where they work.
I imagine that the concept of flexibility is itself flexible, because I'm sure there are some jobs, some roles which are almost infinitely flexible. I mean, if you're self-employed, of course, very largely you're your own boss. You can work where, when, and how much you like, to a large degree, not entirely 100%, but there are some jobs which must be far less flexible. There must be far less innate flexibility in those roles. So is it something that you have to take on a job-by-job basis?
Yes, there is definitely no one-size-fits-all solution to this. But we talk about the ideal scenario being where you get the sweet spot between what individuals need to be able to do their best work in the best way. And that means having a decent work-life balance, having some element of control and input into how they work. And then also what employers need, which is to make sure that they can enable their teams and their people to perform when they need the work to be done in order to be able to have efficient and effective businesses. And that sweet spot in the middle, which in government terms, people often define as sort of two-way flexibility, is the balance you need to get right. It can be incredibly hard because obviously at one end of the spectrum, we can have flexibility driven by employers, which is at the worst case sort of 0 hours contracts where people are, you know, told I need you to work here, here and here and there's no choice. But at the other end, you can have what we would define as sort of inflexible, flexible workers. So people who might work part time and they only work those days and they never budge from that and there's no variation. People need a range of things. And sometimes actually we need predictability because if we've got caring responsibilities or health issues or, you know, other things going on in our lives, actually we need to know when we're working. So it's just about being able to have that kind of level of input and choice. So I think the term flexible working probably needs a bit of a refresh. there's a real range.
yes, quite. I can see that. So tell us a little bit about this survey that you've just completed.
And what have you learned about the construction industry from it?
Yeah.
So as a background, so for the last 6 years, we've been running what we call Timewise Flexible Jobs Index. So we want to understand how many job vacancies in the market reference any form of flexible or part-time working from day one. And that's different from how many people work flexibly, because the government collects data on that through ONS. So we've known for years at Timewise anecdotally that if you need to work flexibly, you often either get a job, but then you get stuck because you look out and you can't find another one, or people often get trapped out of work and they can't get back in, such as women after they've had children. So we look at specifically vacancies. We look at about 6 million every year, and we determine how many of those reference flex. The ratio when we started was incredibly low. This year, we were expecting a huge shift in the number of vacancies because obviously, you know, we're all working flexibly. So you'd expect employers to always think, well, I'll advertise a job with open to flexibility from day one. Actually, the opposite is true. Only 22% of all job vacancies in the UK, just about 2 out of 10 jobs, say anything about flexible working from day one. And in construction, I'm afraid to say the ratio is 12%. So literally just over 1 in 10 jobs in construction.
Has that moved at all in the 6 years you've been doing this study? How what was that 12% figure for construction last year or the year before?
So last year it was 9%. So it's gone up. When we started looking at construction, I'm afraid it was in the sort of 5-6% range.
So it's getting better.
The good news is it's getting better. When we look at all industries and all role types, it is in the bottom tier of industries that offer flexibility from day one, alongside engineering and manufacturing.
Isn't that inevitable, though? Isn't that understandable? That's inherent in the industry, isn't it? I'm not saying we can't change, but it's not surprising to me that it is one of the harder things to change, harder sectors.
Absolutely. I think, you know, they're all sectors that are frontline industries, you know, and I mean, not all jobs are frontline, but clearly if you're on a construction site, then you can't take your laptop and work from home. You are fitting into a grid with a whole load of other people, working out when you need to be on site, when you need to get your briefing, when you need to do your work that fits alongside everybody else's work in the schedule. So frontline industries are challenging when it comes to thinking about flex, but there's always ways that we can explore giving people some kind of choice in how they work. And actually what we've seen over this crisis is I think construction have responded incredibly well in many, many ways. And there's been a real amplification, you know, things that we never thought we could do, we're doing on construction sites when it comes to flexibility.
Well, that's
like good. What? Give some examples, okay. Please.
So one of the things clearly is the morning briefing, that, you know, the assumption is that everybody has to be there at 7 a.m. or 6:30 or whatever it is for a morning briefing on a construction site. So we've certainly seen with our partners and we've seen elsewhere, you know, that morning briefings are being staggered. People are doing more of them because, you know, we're concerned about, obviously, health and safety of crews physically on site over this period. So there have been staggered briefings. Now, that sounds tiny, but actually that's really, really important if you need to stagger the time that you start work and you need to stagger the time that you end work. We've also seen some really interesting areas of innovation. So one of the partners that we've been working with told us recently that they had a guy who checked the track and he normally, so he works on railways. He normally works up and down the railways, mainly at night, because obviously that's when there's least traffic on trains. It's a very physically demanding job. It's a risky job. It's a nighttime job. It's not good in terms of family life, and it's been a real struggle. The pandemic hit. Everybody went into lockdown. He is now using a drone that films the track, and he then analyses the data at home during the day. And he's being incredibly efficient and effective in terms of his work, and he's getting to see his family a bit more as well. So there are roles that can be done in different ways. And the other thing I would say within construction is, you know, the assumption that if you're on a project, you do always need to be on site. I think we've challenged that, because what we're seeing is quite a few supervisory roles, management roles. People have managed to split their time between home and site in a way that they would never have thought feasible before, because I think the culture, you're right to point out, has been one that if you're not there, we have a concern that you're not really doing the job. And I think what we've seen through this year is that starting to be disproved within construction. But I think we've still got a long way to go.
But is flexible working, though, a bit of a white-collar luxury? I mean, if you're an office worker, if you're a manager or someone like that, you can take your laptop home or work on the train or something like that. If you're a bricklayer or a plasterer or a steel fixer, you don't have that flexibility built into your role. So those sort of blue collar jobs, if you like, how can they be flexed?
Well, I think the first thing to say is I think you're absolutely right. We've got to be very careful to not equate remote working with flexible working. So I think the kind of narrative over this year has been we're all working flexibly. That's kind of not true. A lot of people are working from home, excessive hours on Zoom day in, day out. It's not good flexible work, and it's not the only type of flexible work. But absolutely, I mean, over 50% of the workforce work outside of the home, you know, effectively work in industry, in frontline roles, whether it's laying bricks, whether it's in care work, whether it's teaching. We need to be really thoughtful about how we can give people who work outside of the home more level of input and control into how they work. And at TimeWise, there's flex in every job, basically. We look at it through a different axis. So at the beginning, I talked about how much, when and where. Clearly, where is not viable in many frontline roles.
No.
But what you can look at on the when piece, you can look at giving people more advance notice into their shifts, more predictability on when their shifts are going to be. Because, for example, you know, if you're a care worker and you've got your own family to look after, it's very, very difficult when you don't know what shift you're going to be working and what appointment you're going to have to make from day to day to week. So how much notice we get, what level of predictability we have, and what level of input, crucially, we have. And, you know, it's tougher in teams, in shifts, but it can be done. And we've been doing work in other industries, so we've done a lot of work in the retail sector as well. And we've also worked with a number of major NHS trusts, where actually you can shift the balance of, I guess, communication to a team, not just to a manager. So looking at things like team-based rostering, where you take a cohort of people who all have to fit they have to fit into that jigsaw puzzle. And rather than just somebody sitting in a back room with a big flip chart and lots of sticky tape and saying, right, Jane's doing Tuesday first shift, Bob's doing Thursday, sitting around a table with Jane and Bob and everybody else and saying, what are your preferences? When would you like to work? And trying to then work out. And it's complex and you can't always get it right, but trying to give people some say. And I think that's what we need to be thinking about more when it comes to frontline work. And we call that shift life balance.
Yeah, I'll practice that. Emma, can you tell us a little bit about the pilot study you've done with BAM and Skanska and Wilmot Dixon? Have you had any sort of findings coming out of that yet, or is it too early to say?
So in terms of the pilot that we've been doing with, we called it a, it's a Construction Pioneers Programme. We're doing it in partnership with Build UK, and we're also getting support from the Construction Industry Training Body. And at TimeWise, we do these pioneer programmes where we see a sector and we think there's a need for a sectoral approach as opposed to just doing straight consultancy. So we bring leaders in the industry together, we work out with them, we go deep into a diagnostic to say what are the real operational constraints here and the cultural constraints here to giving people more work-life balance, better well-being. And for this, it was very much thinking about sites, and this was thinking about men as well as women, because there's been a lot of conversation about how to help women into construction. Actually, what we wanted to do was to say, well, let's just get the jobs working better, and then the women will obviously come. So we did a diagnostic, and then with our partners, our four construction firms, we designed with each of them a pilot that we would run on a particular site to see how we could support that particular team to get some element of flexibility in how they work. It's been fascinating. Each of them have taken a very different approach. So we're looking at various things from team-based scheduling, which is what I just talked about, through to looking at how we can provide, and we have been providing training for site managers to understand some of the things I'm talking about in terms of job design, to trial different ways of doing briefings, to trial different ways of making sure that people are enabled to deliver set outputs as opposed to being measured purely on input. So there's lots of different things we're trialing. Obviously, we've been doing it through COVID, which has been challenging for the guys on the site. But I think we're going to get some really interesting learnings. And what's coming through loud and clear is three areas we were looking at: working practices, how can we actually change the hours that people work, give them more input, like I said. Second was around culture and behaviours and trying to challenge some of those assumptions that if you're not there at the crack of dawn, if you're not there the last person to leave, you're a slacker. Yeah. And then thinking about the management capabilities, which is how we can support managers on sites to have what we would say just really open and honest conversations to give people the chance to talk about when they might want to work. And we're not saying it's easy. And obviously there are lots of bigger structural issues around, you know, how clients commission work and how tier one and tier two work together and black hats and all of the above. But all of our partners are finding that they're able to give people more input. And the feedback so far has been really, really positive that the teams we're working with feel like they are able to get a bit better sense of well-being, and actually I think the projects are going to deliver well as well.
I would have thought that the COVID pandemic would have actually been a benefit to the work you've been doing this year. I mean, not to say there's anything good about the virus itself, but those construction site people who may have been either agnostic or hostile to the initiative have been forced on board whether they like it or not.
Absolutely. And it has. It's absolutely catalyzed. Some of the things that we were going to test, they've just had to do. And they've had to do it at much more scale. The challenge going forward is how you make that business as usual. And I think the challenge is, are we just doing this because we're having to in a pandemic? But actually, once the vaccine hits and we all come out the other side of this, will we revert to how we used to do it? You know, behavioural change takes a long time. So yes, we've been, I guess, helped, probably not the appropriate word, in terms of changing working practices. But I think the key things going forward is how do we make sure that culture sticks so people keep looking forward and don't go back, so they keep doing these things? And also, how do we make sure that we can codify what these sites have done and scale it so that it doesn't just rely on one site manager who gets it and who will make sure that the team have some flexibility. It's how do you then take that learning into the businesses and make sure that you can then make it a systemic approach so that any site from the future has that sort of principle behind it. And that's where we're going with our partners, which is really, really exciting to see actually.
What sort of time scale are you working on with these partners in construction? Because you're planning to produce reports, you're going to do a flexible job design change program for Wilmot Dixon and the other contractors. When are we going to find the learnings of this? When's that going to come out?
So we'll be publishing our findings in the spring. So we are still, we are finishing off the pilot. So we were due to start our pilots this spring, 2020. We had a slight, obviously, hiatus and delay when sites were shut for a bit. We will be finishing up towards the end of January on sites, and then we're going to be evaluating formally the impact in terms of thinking about wellbeing measures, but also thinking about some of the harder sort of data points around, are the projects still on track, on budget, all the things you would expect from a commercial perspective, and then we'll publish in the spring. So we will make sure, and we will certainly want to come back and tell you what we found when we got that report.
But even well ahead of publishing your findings, you're still clearly having an impact on what's going on in the industry, because Skanska has just recently adopted, I think you call it Flexit or FlexUp or something, some flexible working initiative company-wide. And I know that BAM, on the back of their pilot project, which their first one, BAM Construct, this I should say, rather than BAM Nuttall, they had a project where it's now completed. You're working with them to introduce flexible working for their cohort, which is sort of the professional site management end of the site, rather than the foot soldiers and the trades. But they found that, I think, a brick-roaring success, I would say. I think, again, mentioned a lot of it was perhaps forced on them by COVID. But BAM are also now rewriting their company policies, I believe, to introduce where and how they can flexible working. But I think both those organisations, I don't think that they employ their own trades. So, I mean, David mentioned earlier for the bricklayers and the carpenters and the trades on site, you know, there is a danger of flexible working, I think, being, if we talk about it as a working from home job, and danger of it being a white collar luxury and sort of perhaps reinforcing apartheid on site between the strata. But I suppose the challenge is to get the people who are paid hourly on board. I mean, they might not even want to work part-time, because the less work they do, the less money they make. Whereas the salaried people, they still get their salary.
Yes. So just to say, so we are working with subcontractors as well as with directly employed staff on some of these pilots.
That must be harder, though, isn't it?
It's definitely more challenging structurally, absolutely, because, and you're right to call out, I mean, part-time isn't something that people want. People want as many hours as they can, and particularly if you're travelling, and I think there are all the issues about whether you travel to site and then you'll be there basically Monday to Friday lunchtime, and you just need to put in as many hours in as you can, and then you go home for the weekend. So there are lots of issues to consider, but it's not always about working less. What we're finding from the conversations we're having and from the initial survey work that we did, it's about giving people a little bit more control over the choice of when they do that work. And sometimes the smallest things change. So one of the guys that we spoke to at the beginning of the pilot just wanted to be able to pick his daughter up from school a couple of times a week. He's now able to do that. He told us he didn't even know where the classroom was. And now he not only doesn't know where the classroom is, but he's on first name terms with the teachers. So, and that was just because he was able to request particular shifts that meant that a couple of days he was able to do that. So there is a trade-off around pay and time here. And it's a tough one when you're hourly and you're a subby and your pay isn't great. But actually, a lot of what we're finding is work-life balance does matter to people. And when suicide rates are as high as they are in the industry and mental health issues are as big, you know, I think for us, one of the things that we just wanted to look at with this work is, if we're able to give people more flexibility, but hopefully retain the salaries they have, then can we do something about that? And we're only touching the tip of the iceberg, but I think it's something that we've been really pleased that certainly our partners have really committed to lean into and want to do more.
It sounds like it's about making the offer available rather than about necessarily enforcing it.
And that's exactly right. And there's a broader principle. So at TimeWise, when we do a lot of our work, we talk about being flex positive. And we've actually got a program called Flex Positive, which people can do if they're on the start of this sort of journey. And the whole point is that you move from being reactive as an organization to being proactive. And just to give you an example, I mean, the way we talk about flexible working from a formal legislative perspective is the right to request. The assumption is it's wrapped around an individual. So somebody has to put their hand up and say, I'd like to work differently to their manager. Whereas actually what we want to try and do is invert that. And again, COVID has kind of catalysed that to say, actually, companies should be saying, we are open to you working flexibly. And we're happy to be open to that for people we've never met yet as candidates to shift the 12%. And for our employees, come and talk to us about it. Because all the research shows, not just in construction, but in any industry, that that a policy isn't enough, just saying there's a policy isn't enough, because people feel they'll be stigmatised, they feel they'll be overlooked for promotion. There are a lot of trade-offs if you feel you're one of the few people that's asking to work different in your organisation. What we need to do is shift culture and behaviour so that it feels okay and acceptable and it's the norm. And one of the great things about, you know, all this kind of remote working is we're seeing our business leaders doing this as well. We're in their homes, we see their cats, we see their kids. So it's about normalising flexible working and not assuming that you'll be stigmatized because you're asking for something different. And that's the journey I think we want to, when we come out of the other side of this awful period, we want to hold on to the fact that we need to be changing how we talk about this and that it's a normalized, democratized, gender neutral approach that's led by businesses as much as it is asked by individuals.
It sounds like this cultural shift that we need to make, that employers need to start thinking about the roles within their organizations being more flexible. And you mentioned earlier the fact that after you've been in a job for 6 months, you then have the right to go and request flexibility in your role. You want that actually brought right up to the front so that when somebody applies for a job, they're offered that flexibility. Because there's a sort of trap, isn't there, that, you know, you have to be in this job for 6 months, then you get your flexibility, everything's fine. But if you want to move on, maybe go to a different company, you might have to actually relinquish the flexibility that you're enjoying in the job you're in. So you need the continuity, in other words, not go back to square one every time you change a job or whatever.
Exactly, that's exactly right. And, you know, and there are really clear business benefits for organisations to do this. So, you know, being able to attract a wider talent pool by just saying on a job ad you're open to flex. And also, particularly for construction, you know, for businesses that care about diversity and inclusion and gender, saying simply, we are open to flexible working, you will get more diverse candidates applying. Mm-hmm. Now, I recognise, you know, you could argue in a buyer's market, it's a tough time out there when it comes to, there's a lot of job seekers, but good skills are still really in demand. You know, businesses want the right people with the right skills, and they want diverse workforces, and they want inclusive approaches to work. And so actually embracing flexible working makes really good business sense. And also, we've challenged a lot of the assumptions over this period. There's been some really broad assumptions that actually if people work flexibly, you can't trust them, and performance will drop. Actually, performance has been maintained through this period of crisis. And we've shown that in the main, people will work from home and you can trust them. So it's, you know, business benefits are really, really strong here, but it's also about being good employers and looking after the well-being of our people. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're certainly seeing really thoughtful businesses do through this period is recognising that health and well-being really matters. And if you've got a healthy workforce, you've got an engaged workforce, they're going to be really productive.
Emma, thank you very much. That's been very enlightening, very useful. And lots, I hope, lots of food for thought for people listening.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
Well, we said goodbye to Emma, David and I. But David, that was very interesting, wasn't it? I think we've been looking forward to seeing the final report from TimeWise next spring, won't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did. But before we spoke to Emma, I wouldn't say sceptical, but I was struggling to understand how you could introduce flexibility into the construction industry. I wasn't at all surprised to learn that construction's pretty low down the list of industries that's enjoying flexible working at the moment. But I think that there are some very interesting comments there and some interesting ideas to explore. And yes, I'd be fascinated to see what BAM and Wilmot Dixon and Skanska have to say about it when they finish their pilot projects.
And I think for anyone who says that, oh, you can't possibly be, you know, construction workers have to be on site all the time, it's terribly important work we're doing, I'd say, what about nursing? I mean, they're an awful, you know, I think nurses, most people would say, more important the work they're doing than any construction worker. And
yeah, certainly
I think flexible working is quite common, I think, isn't it, in the health sector?
I don't know.
Not working from home, particularly. I don't think you do nursing from home.
No, not working from home, but I mean...
But on the time...
Hospitals are 24-hour-day organisations.
The shift work, when they work, have control over to a certain extent, I think.
Yeah.
Or can have.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's see where this takes us.
Yes.
Otherwise, David, Christmas is getting ever closer. But next week, David and I will be bringing you our end of the year review. And we'll be talking about some of the things we've enjoyed, reading and writing about over the year, and maybe some of the things we've enjoyed not quite so much during the year. So we'll be talking about all things 2020, same time next week. But for now, from David and I, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.